Johnny and the Bomb by Terry Pratchett, read by Tony Robinson. It was 9 o'clock in the evening in Blackberry High Street, and dark, with occasional light from the full moon behind streamers of worn-out cloud. Here and there, if someone was very close, they might have seen the faintest line of light around a blacked-out window. Some of the shops had sandbags piled in front of them. A poster outside one urged people to dig for victory, as if it were some kind of turnip. A policeman turned the corner. His beat took him up as far as the Methodist Chapel, and in theory would then take him down Paradise Street. But it didn't do that tonight, because there was no Paradise Street anymore, not since last night. There was an army lorry parked by the chapel. Light leaked out from the tarpaulin that covered the back. He banged on it.
"You can't park that here, gents," he said. "I fine you one mug of tea, and we shall say no more about it, eh?"
A tin mug of scalding black tea and a brick-thick sandwich were handed out.
"Much obliged," said the police sergeant, leaning against the lorry. "How's it going, then?" he said. "Haven't heard a bang."
"It's a 25-pounder," said a soldier. "Went right down through the cellar floor. You lot took a real pounding last night, eh? Want to look?"
"Is it safe?"
"Course not," said the soldier cheerfully. "That's why we're here, right? Come on."
"I thought you lot'd be guarding it," said the policeman.
"It's 2 in the morning, and it's been pissing down," said the soldier. "Who is going to steal an unexploded bomb?" The sergeant looked in the direction of the ruined street. There was the sound of bricks sliding.
"Someone is, by the sound of it," he said.
"What? We've got warning signs up," said the soldier.
"Oi!"
Their boots crunched on the rubble strewn across the road. The moon came out from behind the clouds. They could make out a figure at the other end of what remained of the street, near the wall of the pickle factory. The sergeant skidded to a halt.
"Oh, no," he whispered. "It's Mrs. Tachyon."
The soldier stared at the small figure that was dragging some sort of cart through the rubble. "Can't she read all them warning signs? Is she mental? She's right by the house with the bomb in the cellar."
"Yeah. No, she's just different," said the sergeant.
"Bit touched." He raised his voice.
"You just stay where you are, love, and we'll come and get you. Don't want you hurting yourself on all this junk, do we?"
Mrs. Tachyon stood and watched them owlishly as they walked very cautiously towards her. The soldier saw a wizened little woman wearing what looked like a party dress with layers of other clothes on top and a woolly hat with a bobble on it. She was pushing a wire cart on wheels. It had a metal label on it. "Tess Co.," he said.
"What's that?"
The trolley seemed to be full of black bags, but there were other things which glittered in the moonlight.
"I know where she got that stuff," muttered the soldier. "That's been pinched from the pickle factory."
He reached towards the trolley. Some sort of demon, all teeth and glowing eyes, erupted from it and clawed the skin off the back of his hand.
"Blast! Here! Help me get out of..."
But the policeman had backed away.
"That's guilty, that is," he said. "I should come away if I was you."
Mrs. Tachyon cackled.
"Thunderbird, you go,"
she chortled.
"What, no bananas? That's what you think, me old dollypot."
She hauled the trolley round and trotted off, dragging it behind her.
"Hey, don't go in there,"
the soldier shouted. The old woman hauled the trolley over a pile of bricks. A piece of wall collapsed behind her. The last brick hit something far below, which went boink. The soldier and the policeman froze in mid-run. The moon went behind a cloud again. In the darkness, there was a ticking sound. It was far off and a bit muffled. But in that pool of silence, both men heard it all the way up their spines. The policeman's foot, which had been in the air, came down slowly.
"How long have you got? If it starts to tick," he whispered.
There was no one there. The soldier was accelerating away. The policeman ran after him and was halfway up the ruins of Paradise Street before the world behind him suddenly became full of excitement. It was 9 o'clock in the evening in Blackberry High Street. In the window of the electrical shop, 9 TVs projected their flickering screens at the empty air. A newspaper blew along the deserted pavement until it wrapped around the stalks in the ornamental flower bed. The wind caught an empty lager tin and bowled it across the pavement until it hit a drain. Something landed in an alleyway and groaned.
Tick, 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 tickety-boo, ow! National Health Service!
The interesting thing about worrying about things, thought Johnny Maxwell, was the way there was always something new to worry about. His friend Kirsty said it was because he was a natural worrier, but that was because she didn't worry about anything. She got angry instead and did things about whatever it was. Johnny just worried. And all his school teachers seemed to be worrying about him now as well, sending notes home and getting him to see a specialist. Although the specialist wasn't too bad, and at least it got him out of maths. One of the notes had said he was disturbed. Well, who wasn't disturbed? He hadn't shown it to his mum. Things were bad enough as it was, what with the business going down the drain and Dad pushing off and Mum just sitting around smoking all the time and everything.
"You getting on all right at your granddad's?" said Yoles.
It's not too bad. Granddad does the housework most of the time anyway. He's good at fried bread and surprise, surprise.
What's that?
You know that stall on the market that sells tins that have got the labels off?
Yeah?
Well, he buys loads of those, and you've got to eat them once they're opened.
Yuck!
Oh, pineapple and meatballs isn't too bad. They walked on through the evening street. The thing about all of us, Johnny thought, the sad thing is that we're not very good. Actually, that's not the worst part. The worst part is we're not even much good at being not much good. Take Yoles. When you looked at Yoles, you might think he had possibilities. He was black, technically, but he never said yo, and only said check it out in the supermarket, and the only person he ever called a mother was his mother. Sometimes he actually wore a tie. Train spotters were cooler than Yoles. Now, Big Mac was good. He was good at maths, sort of. It made the teachers wild. You could show Big Mac some sort of horrible equation, and he'd say,
X equals 2.75.
And he'd be right. But he never knew why.
It's just what it is,
he'd say. And that was no good. Big Mac was also a skinhead. Big Mac and Bazza and Skaz were the last three skinheads in Blackbury. At least the last three who weren't someone's dad. And he had Love and Hat on his knuckles. But only in biro, because when he'd gone to get tattooed, he fainted. As for Wobbler, Wobbler wasn't even a nerd. He wanted to be a nerd, but they wouldn't let him join. He had a nerd pride badge and he messed around with computers. What Wobbler wanted was to be a kid in milk bottle bottom glasses and a deformed anorak who could write amazing software and be a millionaire by the time he was 20. But he'd probably settle for just being someone whose computer didn't keep smelling of burning plastic every time he touched it.
It wasn't a bad film, he was saying.
They'd been to Screen W at the Blackbury Odeon. They generally went to see any film that promised to have laser beams in it somewhere.
But you can't travel in time without messing things up, said Yoles.
That's the whole point, said Big Mac. That's what you want to do. I wouldn't mind joining the police if they were time police. You'd go back and say, hey, are you Adolf Hitler? And when he said, Achtung, that's me, ja, with the pump-action shotgun, end of problem.
Yes, but supposing you accidentally shot your own grandfather, said Yoles patiently.
I wouldn't. He doesn't look a bit like Adolf Hitler.
I didn't mean actually shooting your actual grandfather, said Yoles loudly. I mean messing things up so maybe you're not actually born or your time machine never gets invented. If you change things, maybe you'd end up not going back in time and there you'd be back in time. I mean, except you never went in the first place, so you wouldn't be able to come back on account of not having gone. Or, even if you could get back, you'd get back to another time, like a sort of parallel dimension. Because if the thing you changed hadn't happened, then you wouldn't have gone. So you could only come back to somewhere you never went, and there you'd be. Stuck.
They tried to work this out.
Huh. You'd have to be mad even to understand time travel, said Wobbler eventually.
Job opportunity for you there, Johnny, said Big Mac.
Big Mac,
said Yoles in a warning voice.
It's all right, said Johnny. The doctor said I'd just worry about things too much.
Paradise Street, thought Johnny. Paradise Street was on his mind a lot these days. Something hissed. They looked around. There was an alleyway between the charity clothes shop and the video library. The hissing came from there, except now it had changed into a snarl.
There was something in the alley, said Wobbler.
A werewolf? Said Big Mac.
Why should it be a werewolf? Wobbler asked.
I saw this film, Curse of the Revenge of the Werewolf, said Big Mac, and someone heard a snarl like that and went into a dark alley, and next thing, he was lying there with all his special effects spilling out on the pavement.
Huh, quavered Wobbler. There's no such things as werewolves.
You go and tell it, then.
Johnny stepped forward. There was a shopping trolley lying on its side just inside the alley. Bulging carrier bags and black plastic dustbin liners lay around it, and there was a number of jars. One of them had broken open and there was a smell of vinegar. One of the bundles was wearing trainers and a rah-rah skirt. You didn't see that very often. A terrible monster pulled itself over the top of the trolley and spat at Johnny. It was white, but with bits of brown and black as well. It was scrawny. It had 3½ legs, but only one ear. Its face was a mask of absolute determined evil. Its teeth were jagged and yellow, its breath as nasty as a pepper spray. Johnny knew it well.
Hello, Guilty, he said.
If Guilty was here, and the shopping trolley was here, he looked down at the bundle with the trainers.
I think something's happened to Mrs. Tachyon, he said.
Mrs. Tachyon had always been there as long as Johnny could remember. She was a bag lady before people knew what bag ladies were, although, strictly speaking, she was a trolley woman. It wasn't a normal supermarket trolley either. It looked bigger. The wires looked thicker. And it hurt like mad when Mrs. Tachyon pushed it into the small of your back, which she did quite a lot. It wasn't that she did it out of nastiness. Well, it probably wasn't. But other people just didn't exist on planet Tachyon. Fortunately, one wheel squeaked. You got accustomed to moving away quickly when you heard the squeak, 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 squeak coming. The others hurried up.
Is that blood? Said Wobbler.
Eh,
said Big Mac.
Eh.
I think she's alive, said Johnny. I'm sure I heard a groan.
I know first aid, said Yoles uncertainly. Kiss of life and stuff.
Kiss of life, Mrs. Tachyon, bleh,
said Big Mac. Yoles knelt down gingerly. He patted Mrs. Tachyon vaguely, and something fell out of one of her many pockets. It was fish and chips, wrapped in a piece of newspaper.
She's always eating chips, said Big Mac. My brother says she picks thrown away papers out of the bin to see if there's any chips still in them. There!
Said Yoles desperately, as he tried to find a way of administering first aid without actually touching anything. Finally, Johnny came to his rescue and said, I know how to dial 999. Yoles sagged with relief.
Yeah, yes, that's right, he said. I'm pretty sure you mustn't move people on account of breaking bones.
Or the crust, said Wobbler.
The ambulance drove off, blue light flashing. Guilty watched Johnny from the trolley, cross-eyed with hatred.
The ambulance man said she looked as if she'd been hit by something, said Wobbler, who was also watching the cat.
It was never a good idea to take your eye off Guilty.
What are we going to do with all this stuff? Said Johnny.
Yeah, can't leave it, said Big Mac. That'd be littering.
Johnny prodded a bag. It moved a bit, and then flowed back with an unpleasant oozing noise.
You know, my brother said Mrs. Tachyon killed her husband years ago and then went mental and they never found his body, said Big Mac.
They looked at the bags.
None of them is big enough for a dead body, said Yoles.
Not a whole one, no, said Big Mac.
Yoles took a step back.
Look, I'll just put it in my granddad's garage, said Johnny.
And while you got it, you could have a rummage to see if there's any money, said Big Mac.
Johnny glanced at Guilty, who snarled.
No, I like a hand with all its fingers on, he said.
You lot come with me. I'd feel a right clod pushing this by myself.
The fourth wheel squeaked and bounced as he pushed the trolley down the street.
Looks heavy, said Yoles.
There was a snigger from beside him.
Well, they say Mr. Tachyon was a very big man. Shut up, Big Mac!
Here, said Wobbler. These fish and chips are still warm.
What? Said Johnny. You picked up her actual fish and chips?
Wobbler backed away.
Well, yeah. Why not? Shame to let them go to waste.
They might have got a spit on them, said Big Mac.
Bleh.
They haven't even been unwrapped, actually, said Wobbler.
But he did stop unwrapping them. Put them in the trolley, Wobbler, said Johnny.
Dunno who wraps fish and chips in newspaper round here, said Wobbler, tossing the package onto the pile in the trolley. Hong Kong Henry doesn't. Where'd she get them?
Sir John was normally awakened at 8:30 every morning by a butler who brought him his breakfast, another butler who brought him his clothes, a third butler whose job it was to feed the goldfish if necessary, and a fourth butler who was basically a spare. At 9 o'clock, his secretary came and read him his appointments for today. When she did so this morning, though, she found him still staring at his plate with a strange expression.
5 different kinds of pills, some biscuits made of cardboard, and a glass of orange juice with all the excitement removed, said Sir John. What's the point of being the richest man in the world? I am still the richest man in the world, aren't I?
Yes, Sir John.
Well, what's the point if it all boils down to pills for breakfast?
He drummed his fingers on the table.
I've had enough, do you hear? Tell Hickson to get the car out.
Which car, Sir John?
The Bentley.
Which Bentley, Sir John?
Oh, one I haven't used lately. He can choose. And find Blackberry on the map. We own a burger bar there, don't we?
I think so, Sir John. Wasn't that the one where you personally chose the site? You said you just knew it would be a good one.
Yes. Blackberry, he said.
That's where you were evacuated during the war, wasn't it?
That's right. That's where it all started, said Sir John, getting up and going over to the window. Mrs. Tachyon and the trolley, Johnny, and the rest of them. And that's where it's all going to end.
Johnny always enjoyed those first few moments in the morning before the day leapt out at him. His head was peacefully full of flowers, clouds, kittens. His hand still hurt. Horrible bits of last night rushed out from hiding and bounced and gibbered in front of him. There was a shopping trolley full of unspeakable bags in the garage. There was also a spray of milk across the wall and ceiling, where Guilty had shown what he thought of people who tried to give him an unprovoked meal. Johnny had had to use the biggest elastoplast in the medicine tin afterwards. He got up, dressed, and went downstairs. His mother wouldn't be up yet, and his granddad was definitely in the front room watching Saturday morning TV. Johnny opened the garage door and stepped back hurriedly in case a ball of maddened fur came spinning out. Nothing happened. The dreadful trolley stood in the middle of the floor. There was no sign of Guilty. He shut the door quickly, then went back into the house. He probably ought to tell someone official. The trolley belonged to Mrs. Tachyon. Actually, it probably belonged to Mr. Tesco or Mr. Safeway, so it might be stealing if he kept it. As he went back inside, the phone rang. It started saying, "Hello? Hello?" before he even got it to his ear. "Hello?" he said. "Is that you?" said a female voice. It wasn't exactly an unpleasant one, but it had a sharp, penetrating quality. It seemed to be saying that if you weren't you, then it was your fault. "Yep. Yeah. Hello, Kirsty."
"It's Cassandra, actually."
"Oh, right," said Johnny. He'd have to make a note. Kirsty changed her name about as often as she changed her clothes.
"Have you heard about old Mrs. Tachyon?"
"I think so," said Johnny guardedly.
"Apparently a gang of yobs beat her up last night. She looks as though a bomb had hit her. Hello? Hello? Hello?"
"I'm still here," said Johnny. Someone had filled his stomach with ice.
"Don't you think that's shameful?"
"Yes."
"One of them was black."
Johnny nodded dismally at the phone. Yoles had explained about this sort of thing. He'd said that if one of his ancestors had joined Attila the Hun's huge horde of millions of barbarians and helped them raid ancient Rome, people would have definitely remembered that one of them was black. And this was Yoles, who collected brass bands, had a matchbox collection, and was a known spod. He said, "It was us. I mean, we didn't beat her up, but we found her. I got the ambulance, and Yoles was definitely thinking about first aid."
"Didn't you tell the police?"
"No.
Honestly, I don't know what would happen if I wasn't around. You've got to tell them now. I'll meet you at the police station in half an hour. Ciao!
Actually, after he'd been to the toilet, he felt a bit better about it all. Kirsty, Cassandra, took charge of things. She was the most organised person Johnny knew. In fact, she was so organised that she had too much organisation for one person, and it overflowed in every direction. He'd better tell Grandad where he was going, he thought, just in case the power went off or the TV broke down and he wondered where Johnny had gone. Just off to, he began then. Just off out.
Right,
said Grandad, without taking his eyes off the set. Nothing much was going on in the garage. After a while, Guilty crawled out from his nest among the black plastic sacks and took up his usual position in the front of the cart, where he was wont to travel on the off chance that he could claw somebody. A fly banged on the window pane for a while and then went back to sleep. And the bags moved. They moved like frogs in oil, slithering very slowly around each other. They made a rubbery, squeaky noise, like a clever conjurer trying to twist an animal out of balloons. There were other noises too. Guilty didn't pay them much attention because he couldn't attack noises, and besides, he was pretty well used to them by now. They weren't very clear. They might have been snatches of music. They might have been voices. They might have been a radio left on, but slightly off station and two rooms away, or the distant roar of a crowd. Johnny met Cassandra outside the police station. "You're lucky I've got some spare time," she said. "Come on." Sergeant Cumley was on the desk. He looked up as Johnny and Cassandra came in, then looked back at the book he was writing in. "What is it this time? Seen any aliens lately?"
"We've come about Mrs. Tachyon, Sergeant," said Cassandra.
"Oh, yes."
"Go on," she said. "Tell him."
Said Johnny. "Well, me and Wobbler and Yoles and Big Mac."
"Wobbler and Yoles and Big Mac and I," said Cassandra.
Sergeant Cumley looked at her.
"All five of you?"
he said.
"I was just correcting his grammar," said Cassandra.
"Do you do that a lot?" said the sergeant.
He looked at Johnny.
"Does she do that a lot?"
"All the time," said Johnny.
"Good grief. Well, go on. You, not her."
20 minutes later, they walked slowly down the steps of the police station.
"Well, that wasn't too bad," said Cassandra. "It's not as though you were arrested or anything. Have you really got her trolley?"
"Oh, yes."
"I liked the look on his face when you said you'd bring Guilty in. He went quite pale, I thought."
"What's next of kin mean?" "He said she'd got no next of kin."
"Relatives," said Cassandra. "Basically, it means relatives."
"Well, I suppose we could go and see her," said Johnny. "She's only in St. Mark's."
"What good would that do?"
"Well, might cheer her up a bit."
"Do you know, you start almost every sentence with well."
"Well, I just think we ought to do it." "You'd better take her something, too. You have to."
"Like grapes, you mean?"
Johnny tried to picture Mrs. Tachyon eating grapes. It didn't work.
"I'll think about it."
The garage door swung back and forth slowly. Inside the garage there was a concrete floor. It was old and cracked and soaked in oil. Animal footprints crossed it, embedded in the concrete, suggesting that a dog had run across it when it was being laid. This happens in every patch of wet concrete everywhere. There were also a couple of human footprints, fossilised in time, and now filled with black grease and dust. In other words, it was more or less like any piece of concrete. There was also a tool bench, most of a bicycle upside down and surrounded by tools, a lawnmower entangled in a garden hosepipe, a trolley overflowing with plastic bags of all kinds, but most particularly six large black ones, a small pile of jars of pickles where Johnny had carefully stacked them last night, the remains of some fish and chips. As far as Guilty was concerned, cat food only happened to other cats. A pair of yellow eyes watching intently from the shadows under the bench. And that was all. Kirsty was good at finding out things and getting harassed people to give her answers, and it didn't take long to find Mrs. Tachyon.
"That's her, isn't it?"
she said. Mrs. Tachyon was sitting up in bed in a hospital nightgown and her woolly hat, over which she had a pair of hospital headphones.
She stared intently in front of her and jigged happily among the pillows.
She looks happy enough, said Cassandra. What's she listening to?
I couldn't say for sure, said the nurse. All I know is the headphones aren't plugged in. Are you relatives?
No, we're... Cassandra began. It's a sort of project, said Johnny.
The magic project word did its usual helpful stuff, though the nurse said, Can I smell vinegar?
We've just brought some grapes, said Johnny, showing her the bag.
Mrs. Tachyon didn't look up as they dragged chairs over to her bed. Cassandra leant over and pulled one earphone aside.
Hello, Mrs. Tachyon, she said.
Mrs. Tachyon stopped jigging. She turned a beady eye on Cassandra and then on Johnny. She had a black eye and her stained white hair looked frizzled at the front. But there was something horribly unstoppable about Mrs. Tachyon.
Indeed, that's what you think. Millennium hand and shrimp, free teeth and corsets, maybe, for them as likes it, but not me, thank you so much. What, no bananas? Hats.
Are they treating you all right? Said Cassandra.
Don't you worry, right as rain and twice as ninepence. Ha! Tick, tick, bang, I'd like to see them try. There's puddings. Of course, I remember when it was all fields, but would they listen?
Cassandra looked at Johnny.
I think she's a bit confused, she said. She doesn't understand anything I'm saying.
But we don't understand anything she's saying either, said Johnny, who felt confused all the time in any case. Mrs. Tachyon adjusted her headphones and started to boogie.
I don't believe this, said Cassandra. Excuse me.
She pulled them off the woolly hat and listened.
The nurse was right, she said. There's nothing at all.
Mrs. Tachyon bounced up and down happily.
One born every minute,
she chortled. Then she winked at Johnny. It was a bright, knowing wink from planet Tachyon to planet Johnny. We've brought you some grapes, Mrs. Tachyon, he said.
That's what you think.
Grapes, said Johnny firmly. He opened the bag, exposing the steaming greaseproof fish and chip paper inside. Her eyes widened. A scrawny hand shot out from under the covers, grabbed the packet and disappeared under the blanket again.
Him and his coat,
she said. Don't mention it. I'm keeping your trolley safe, and Guilty is all right, although I don't think he's eaten anything apart from some chips and my hand.
I blame Mr. Chamberlain,
said Mrs. Tachyon. A bell tinkled. Oh dear, that's the end of visiting time. My word, don't the hours just fly past? What a shame, said Cassandra, standing up. Come on, Johnny.
Lady Mac,
said Mrs. Tachyon. She nodded at Johnny.
What's the word on the street, Mr. Man?
Johnny tried to think like Mrs. Tachyon. No parking? He suggested.
That's what you think. Them's bags of time, Mr. Man. Mind me bike. Where your mind goes, the rest of you's bound to follow. Here today and gone yesterday. Doing it's the trick, eh?
Johnny stared. It was as though he'd been listening to a lot of static on the radio, and then, just for a second, there was this one clear signal. The other Mrs. Tachyon came back.
He's mixing sugar with the sand, Mr. McPhee, she said. That's what you think.
What did you have to go and give her them for? Cassandra hissed as she strode out of the ward. She needs a proper, healthy, balanced diet, not hot chips.
Well, I thought hot chips would be exactly what someone would like who'd got used to cold chips. Anyway, she didn't get any supper last night.
Hey, there was something very odd about... She is very odd. My mother said she was married to an airman in the Second World War and he never came back and she went a bit strange.
My granddad said he and his friends used to tip up her trolley when he was a boy. He said they did it just to hear her swear. Cassandra hesitated.
What? How old is your granddad?
Don't know. About 65.
And how old is Mrs. Tachyon, would you say?
It's hard to tell under all those wrinkles. 60?
Doesn't that strike you as odd?
What?
Are you dense or something? She's younger than your grandfather.
Oh. Well, perhaps there was another Mrs. Tachyon.
That isn't very likely, is it?
So you're saying she's 100 years old?
Of course not. There's bound to be a sensible explanation.
Yes, but she's got some odd stuff.
How do you mean?
Well, there are these jars of pickles.
Well, old people like pickles.
Yes, but these are kind of new and old at the same time. And there was fish and chips wrapped up in a newspaper. Well, no one wraps up fish and chips in newspaper these days, but they all look fresh. I had a look because I thought I might as well give the fish to the cat. And the newspaper...
Johnny stopped. What could he say? That he knew that front page? He knew every word of it? He'd found the same one on the microfiche in the library, and the librarian had given him a copy to help him with his history project? He'd never seen it apart from the copy and the fuzzy image on the screen, and suddenly there it was, unfolded in front of him, greasy and vinegary, but undoubtedly... new? Well, let's have a look at the bags at least. That can't hurt. Cassandra was like that. When all else failed, she tried being reasonable. The big black car sped up the motorway. There were two motorcyclists in front and two more behind, and another car trailing behind them, containing some serious men in suits who listened to little radios a lot and wouldn't even trust their mothers. Sir John sat by himself in the back of the black car, with his hands crossed on his silver-topped walking stick and his chin on his hands. There were two screens in front of him, which showed him various facts and figures to do with his companies around the world, beamed down to him from a satellite, which he also owned. There were also two fax machines and three telephones. Sir John sat and stared at them. Then he reached over and pressed the button that operated the driver's intercom. He'd never liked Hickson much. The man had a red neck. On the other hand, he was the only person there was to talk to right now.
"Do you believe it's possible to travel in time, Hickson?"
"Couldn't say, sir," said the chauffeur without turning his head.
"It's been done, you know."
"If you say so, sir."
"Do you know that when you change time you get two futures heading off side by side?"
"Must have missed that at school, sir. Like... a pair of trousers." "Definitely something to think about, Sir John."
Sir John stared at the back of the man's neck.
It really was very red, and had unpleasant little patches of hair on it.
"Take the next left turn," he snapped.
"We're still 20 miles from Blackberry, sir."
"Do what you're told right now."
The car skidded, spun half around, and headed up the off-ramp with smoke coming from its tyres.
"Turn left."
"But there's traffic coming, Sir John."
"If they haven't got good brakes, they shouldn't be on the road." "Good. You see? Turn right."
"That's just a lane. I'll lose my job, Sir John."
Sir John sighed.
"Hickson, I'd like to lose all our little helpers. If you can get me to Blackberry by myself, I will personally give you £1,000,000. I'm serious."
The chauffeur glanced in his mirror.
"Why didn't you say so, sir? Hold on to something, sir."
As the car plunged down between high hedges, all three of the telephones started to ring. Sir John stared at them for a while. Then he pressed the button that wound down the nearest window and one by one threw them out. The fax machine followed. After some effort, he managed to detach the two screens and they went out too, exploding very satisfactorily when they hit the ground. He felt a lot better for that. The bus pulled up at the end of Johnny's road and Cassandra and he got off. The garages were in a little cul-de-sac around the back of the houses. They weren't used much, at least for cars. Most of Grandad's neighbours parked in the street so that they could enjoy complaining about stealing one another's parking spaces. Johnny pushed open the door. The trolley was where he'd left it. There was something odd about it that he couldn't quite put his finger on. It was clearly standing in the middle of the floor, but managed to give the impression of moving very fast at the same time, as though it were a still frame from a movie. Cassandra, formerly Kirsty, looked around.
"Bit of a damp," she said.
"Why's that bike upside down over there?"
"It's mine," said Johnny. "It got a puncture yesterday. I haven't managed to repair it yet."
Cassandra picked up one of the jars of pickle from the bench. The label was sooty. She wiped it and turned it towards the light.
"Blackberry Preserves Limited Gold Medal Empire Brand Mustard Pickle," she read. "And then there's a picture of some sort of crazed street kid jumping about, and it says underneath, 'Up in the air leaps little Tim. Blackberry pickles have bitten him.' Very clever." "Well, they're pickles, so what?"
"They're from the old pickle factory," said Johnny. "It got blown up during the war.
at the same time as Paradise Street. Pickles haven't been made here for more than 50 years.
Oh, no, said Cassandra. You don't mean we're in a town where no pickles are made? That's creepy, that is.
You don't have to be sarcastic. It's just odd, was all I meant. And what about this? Out of his pocket came the newspaper that had wrapped Mrs. Tachyon's fish and chips. He spread it out.
It's an old newspaper, said Johnny. I mean, it's very old, but not old. That's all stuff about the Second World War, but it doesn't look old or feel old or smell old. I know, it's probably one of those reprinted newspapers you can get for the day you were born. My father got me one for wrapping fish and chips, said Johnny. It's odd, I must admit.
She turned and looked at him as though seeing him for the first time.
I've waited years for something like this, she said slowly. Haven't you?
For something like Mrs. Tachyon's trolley?
Try to pay attention, will you? This is obviously something very odd, she said. Possibly mystic. Possibly a time machine of some sort.
A time machine? A time shopping trolley?
Well, what other explanation fits the facts? Apart from possibly she was kidnapped by aliens and brought here at the speed of light, which is something they do a lot for some reason, but there might be something else. I'm sure you've thought of it.
She glanced at her watch. No hurry, she added sarcastically. Take your time. Yo Less says you can't have time machines because everyone would keep changing the future, said Johnny.
Oh. So what's the alternative? How come she's turned up with this new old newspaper and all these new old pickle jars? All right, but I don't go leaping to great big conclusions. In fact, he did. He knew he did all the time. But there was something about the way Cassandra argued that automatically made you take the other side.
He waved a hand at the trolley.
I mean, he said, do you really think something could just press the, oh, the handle or the bags or something and suddenly it's Hello, Norman the Conqueror?
He thumped his hand down on a black bag. The world flashed in front of his eyes. There was concrete under his feet, but there were no walls, at least not much in the way of walls. They were one brick high. A man cementing the new row looked up very slowly.
Blimey, he said. How did you get there?
Then he seemed to get a grip of himself.
Hey, that concrete's still... Fred! You come here.
A spaniel sitting by the man barked at Johnny and rushed forward, jumping and knocking him back against the trolley. There was another flash. It was red and blue, and it seemed to Johnny that he was squashed very flat and then pulled out again. There were walls, and the shopping trolley was still in the middle of the floor, as was Cassandra, staring at him.
You vanished for a moment, she said, as if he'd done something wrong. What happened?
I don't know.
How should I know? Said Johnny.
Move your feet, she said, very slowly. He did. They met a very slight obstacle, a tiny ridge in the floor. He looked down.
Oh, they're just the footprints in the cement, he said. They've been there ages.
Cassandra knelt down to look at the footprints he'd been standing in. They were ingrained with dust and dirt, but she made him take off his trainer and held it upside down by the print. It matched exactly.
See, she said triumphantly, you're standing in your own footprints.
Johnny stepped gingerly aside and looked at the footprints. There was no doubt they'd been there a long time.
Where did you go?
Back in time, I think. There was a man building this place and a dog.
A dog?
Said Cassandra. Her voice suggested that she would have seen something much more interesting. She shifted the trolley. It was standing in four small grooves in the concrete. They were dirty and oily. They'd been there a long time, too.
This, said Kirsty, is no ordinary shopping trolley.
She prodded a bag. The air flickered and changed. Cassandra looked around her. The garage hadn't changed in any way except...
Who repaired your bike? She said.
Johnny turned. His bike was no longer upside down with the wheel off, but leaning against the wall, both tyres quite full.
You see, I notice things, said Cassandra. I am remarkably observant. We must have gone into the future when you've mended it. Let's have a look round. The important thing is to find out which horses are going to win races and so on. Why? So we can bet money on them and become rich, of course. Grandad has a racing paper, said Johnny, feeling a bit light-headed. Let's go then. What, into my house? Of course. Supposing I meet me. Well, you've always been good at making friends. Reluctantly, Johnny led the way out of the garage. Garden paths in the future, he noted, were made of some gritty grey substance which was amazingly like cracked concrete. Back doors were an excitingly futuristic faded blue colour, with little dried flakes where the paint had bubbled up. It was locked, but his ancient key still fitted. There was a rectangle on the floor consisting of spiky brown hairs. He wiped his feet on it and looked at the time measurement module on the wall. It said 3:10. The future was amazingly like the present. Now we've got to find a newspaper, said Kirsty. It won't be a lot of help, said Johnny. Grandad keeps them around until he's got time to read them. They go back months. Anyway, everything's normal. This doesn't look very futuristic to me. Don't you even have a calendar? Yes, there's one on my bedside clock. I just hope I'm at school, that's all. According to the clock, it was the 3rd of October. The day before yesterday, said Johnny. Mind you, it could be the clock. It doesn't work very well. Yuck! You sleep in here, said Kirsty, looking around with an expression like a vegetarian in a sausage factory. Yeah, it's my room. Kirsty ran her hand over his desk, which was fairly crowded at the moment. What are all these photocopies and photos and things? That's the project I'm doing in history. We're doing the Second World War. So I'm doing Blackberry in the war. He tried to get between her and the desk. But Kirsty was always interested in things people didn't want her to see. Hey, this is you, isn't it? She said, grabbing a sepia photograph. Since when did you wear a uniform and a pudding basin haircut? Johnny tried to grab it. And that's Grandad when he was a bit older than me, he mumbled. I tried to get him to talk about the war like the teacher said, but he tells me to shut up about it. You're so local, aren't you? Said Kirsty. I can't imagine much happening here. Something did happen, said Johnny. He pulled out Mrs. Tachyon's chip paper and jabbed at the front page with his finger. At 11:07 p.m. on May the 21st, 1941, bombs, real bombs. They called it the Blackberry Blitz, and this is the paper from the day after. Look. He rummaged among the stuff on his desk and pulled out a photocopy. See? I got a copy of the same page out of the library, but this paper's real. It's new. If she is from the past, why does she wear an old rah-rah skirt and trainers? Said Kirsty. Johnny glared angrily at her. She had no right not to care about Paradise Street. 19 people got killed in one night, he said. There wasn't any warning. The only bombs that fell on Blackberry in the whole of the war, all the people got killed. There was the click of the front door opening. Your granddad? Hissed Kirsty. He always goes shopping in town on Thursdays, whispered Johnny. And Mum's at work. Who else has got a key? Only me. Someone started to climb the stairs. But I can't meet me, said Johnny. I'd remember, wouldn't I? Yoles says, if you meet yourself, the whole universe explodes. I'd remember that happening. The door handle turned. The door opened a fraction. Downstairs, the phone rang. The handle clicked back. Footsteps went downstairs again. Johnny heard the phone picked up. A distant voice said, Oh, hi, Wobbler. Kirsty looked at Johnny and raised her eyebrows. Wobbler phoned, said Johnny. About going to the movies, yes, tomorrow. I just remembered. Were you on the phone long? Don't think so. And I went to get a sandwich afterwards. Where's your phone? In the front room. Let's go then. Kirsty opened the door and darted down the stairs with Johnny trailing behind her. His coat was on the coat rack. He was also wearing it. He stood and stared. Come on, hissed Kirsty. She was almost at the bottom when the door started to open. Johnny opened his mouth to say, Oh, yes, I remember. I had to go and get my wallet to see if I'd got any money. He desperately wanted not to meet himself. If the entire universe exploded, people would be bound to blame him afterwards. And there was a flash in front of his eyes.